kicks have you got? That's the answer to everything. Possessions. You give me possessions and I'll shut up.
One last roll of the dice for the Eagles. Leo Barry, you star.
Needs to be in perfect the Eagles.
How will it bounce? The stadium holds its breath. It's a goal.
He's jumped out of the thinking chair right now. He feels like Einstein.
Okay, welcome to the Herald Sun Pure Footy Podcast. David King here with Daniel Horney from Champion Data. Welcome, Horney.
King, pleasure to be here.
Should be a bit of fun. So what we're going to do across the course of the finals is break down each final game by game and just have a look at the strengths and weaknesses of each team from a statistical slash analytical point of view. Let's start with Port Adelaide versus Geelong, Thursday night football. Cannot wait for this one, Horney. What did Port bring to the table? That's the biggest challenge for the Cats.
I think if Port can get it on their terms from, you know, from the clearance point of view, which has been their number one strength for the whole season, that, you know, they are the number one clearance team across the course of the season. And if they get that game going and get the game played in their forward half, we know that, you know, throughout the season that they have been really difficult to exit their front half, if you like. So I think that's the biggest challenge for Geelong come Thursday night.
If you just stick with the clearances per set, and I think there's so many different discussions around what makes a good clearance team and why both teams are so dynamic. As you said, number one and two in the competition this year, both Adelaide and Geelong. So this is strength versus strength. So this is what I really love about the finals. When you get to this small margin point end of the season, I like to compare the best teams against other top eight teams. So trim the fat if you can. Get rid of the all-star rank because they can often distort the figures. If you have a look at Geelong, they're plus 70 points in scores from clearances against the top eight teams. The next best is Collingwood at plus 34, Brisbane at plus 25. So I think that the Cats have this ability to put one clearance on the scoreboard, whereas I'm not as convinced in Port. With Port, I think they get territory, then they step back into that other mode you're talking about. So for me, it's a real threat and a real danger here for Port Adelaide. If they don't win clearance, I think they're in real trouble.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Given how much that they actually rely on that front half game, if they can't get the clearance battle going their way, I think it's a twofold issue for Port Adelaide potentially. One, they're not going to get the territorial dominance that they need. But then two, as you said, we know that Geelong can actually get clearance wins onto the scoreboard better than most teams in the competition, if not better than anyone else in the competition. So I think if you go back to that week of 12 game where these two played against each other, that was a real significant win for Geelong that night. Breaking even around the clearance situation, then they were able to get the territorial dominance, but then they're also able to get some scoreboard return from those clearances. And if you have a look at the three losses this year, for Port Adelaide, we just talked about that Geelong game in round 12. Brisbane were able to expose them from a stoppage point of view from quarter time onwards. And then St Kilda in the round nine game this year were able to actually really get some significant scoreboard return on the back of Marshall and Paddy Ryder's dominance in the run contest.
Go back to centre bounces, absolute centre bounces. So that's clearances in total. It's around the ground, particularly midfield stoppages are so important. But centre bounce clearances, given that Port Adelaide, as you said, are a territory-based team, they're a total territory team, really. It's the only way they score, through clearances from forward half territory gains. I had a closer look at who are the players you really need to look at. So when my mind goes to Port Adelaide in the midfield, I start thinking of Rockliffe and Wines and the bigger body guys. But it's actually Lysette to Boak that's the real threat. So I'm wondering whether Geelong will put time into Boak at clearance rather than those other guys that are maybe the traditional clearance type winners. They look the part. They're not as effective or not as damaging as what Boak is. So would they, do you think, Geelong target a Boak at clearance?
I think, looking at what they've done this year in particular, the answer would probably be no, given that, Guthrie has been that person at times over the last couple of years, but they've tried to use Guthrie in a more offensive role, if you like, this year. So, whether or not Guthrie does watching as opposed to a really hard, hard and fast tag, I think it would be interesting to see. But I also think that, sort of, if you're looking at that Port Adelaide midfield, I get where you're coming from with Boak. Ollie Wines' form since about round 8 or round 9, he's rated as one of the best midfielders in the competition, along with Dangerfield, along with Fontenpally. Mm. So he's actually starting to have the impact on matches as well, not just in the clearance situation as well. So I think that, you know, I think the player of midfield has grown to a degree on the back of Wines, over the last 3 months, as opposed to just purely relying on Travis Bowie. So I think it's a really situation, but I would tend to lead on just backing in what they do around the clearance situation as opposed to a hard and fast tag, if you like.
Yeah, I want to put a little asterisk on this for the post game review. Forward 50 stoppages, they're everything. We've talked a lot this year about Hawkins grabbing the ball out of the rack, out of the ruck, I should say, quick kicking around the corner and kicking goals. He's the most dominant smash and grab top ruckman in the competition at the moment. Geelong are number one at scoring from stoppages. And I think finals, really, cutthroat finals come down to moments. We all remember Gary Ablett wrapping that ball around his body off the boundary, throwing way back wing. I think it was 07. It was a long time ago. Now, those sorts of moments are huge. So there's a big threat there for me with the Cats ball 50 stoppage. But let's get to the press. Let's get to Port Adelaide's game. So they win the initial clearance or a centre bounce clearance, and they get the ball in their forward half. How do you see this unfolding? How do you see this playing out?
It's probably the most fascinating watch from the outside of that stoppage situation, if you like, because, history suggests throughout this year that, expect the game to be played in Adelaide's half, for more often than what it will be for Geelong's half, if you like. But the real challenge, I think, for Adelaide is being able to keep the ball locked in their forward half and denying Geelong's ball movement from the back half, if you like. So, if you revert back to that round 12 game, Geelong were able to kick 9 goals from their back half trains against Port Adelaide. So they were able to actually get through the Port Adelaide press, if you like, which we've seen Richmond be able to do it a little bit in that round 11 game. We saw Brisbane be able to do it early on in the season. So, and across the course of the year, Geelong, other than Richmond, have been the highest scoring team, been able to go from one end of the ground to the other. So I think that's a challenge in itself, is that, okay, Port Adelaide will be able to get it in there. We're seeing against the lower ranked teams at the bottom, keep it in there. Can they do that against Geelong, who we've seen, as we said, in that round 12 game, they're able to get through, and we're seeing Port Adelaide struggle against the best team at times during the year.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going back to again, versus the top 8 versus the Brumbies. So you've just got to make sure you're comparing apples with apples. So it's about intercepting the ball or winning the ball back in that mid zone. So once the ball comes out of Geelong's defensive 50, where are they going? If they're blasting it long, that plays into Port's hands. So against the also-rans versus against the top 8. So they averaged 38 intercepts in the mid zone for the year, Port Adelaide. But if you look at what happened against Brisbane and Geelong, they only got 23 and 24. So you just don't get the chance against the better teams in the competition to pick the ball off. Richmond are a bit different, and I'm going to put a line through the night that Richmond played Port Adelaide because it was their VFL team effectively that represented them. I know the system's the same, and I know that they scored heavily once they got through and Port scored heavily when they turned the ball over. So to me, that's a little a danger game to be reviewing too heavily. But I just want to get back to what they do against the best teams by what they do against the rest. So I think that the lesser-ranked teams panic easily, dump the ball quickly, and that's why you get 38 intercepts in that true mid-zone versus what Brisbane and particularly Geelong were prepared to give up. Darcy Byrne-Jones is the number one player in the AFL at turning intercepts into points in that mid-zone, and Hamish Hartlett is number 5. So they're the two threats. So I think Chris Scott will put time into these guys. I don't think he'll allow them to just position themselves where they want and charge from that point of view. But I just want to touch on some of the numbers if we can, because the press is everything. So if you look at what Port Adelaide earned from the forward half press, they earn 34 points a week in terms of what they get against the best. It's 34 points. Against the bottom 10 teams, it's 43. So I'm going to just correct the numbers. I'm going to say, okay, they're losing 9 points there automatically this week on a top 8 base team or through the final series. What they give up on counter-attack. So you mentioned last time Geelong were able to kick 57 points at their back half, moving the ball quite easily. Against the also-ranked, they had 25 points. Against against the top teams, they only concede 18 points. So, again, there's another 7-point loss there. So, the two combined, so what you allow on counterpunch and what you get from turnover is a 16-point gap. Now, do they need to find that 16 points, or do you just say, no, they score more against the poorer teams than they do against the best teams? Because I think there's a real question mark as to whether they can find another method to score on what we've seen this year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think the other challenge that Port Adelaide does have in that space as well is that Geelong has given up the fewer points, if you like, from opposition's four dark press in the competition. So they're going to be a real challenge for Port Adelaide to be able to be able to get that 34 points on average to start with, but then be able to gain a little bit extra to be able to get some more scoreboard return. But I think when sort of we're looking at this game, and I think that you just touched on about the Richmond performance and ignoring that, the more I've looked at this week and last week, the more I'm sort of leaning towards that maybe that Geelong game in round 12 was the outlier. Maybe that was just the absolute outlier in their performance. And maybe the week before against Richmond, where we did question Port Adelaide's credentials, given that they lost to St Kilda, given that they lost to Brisbane, they got themselves up emotionally and mentally, if you like, so much for that Richmond game. And they really did dominate Richmond that day. They probably should have won a lot more on the scoreboard. And then the following week, 6 days later, they come up against Geelong. And I think mentally, I think it would be a real challenge to be able to go back to back mentally. We've got up to Richmond, we've held to Richmond, and then the week after. Because those numbers that Geelong dished out to Port Adelaide that time, they're so far out of the ordinary for what Port Adelaide have done this year. The 57 points in the back half, that's extreme. Mm. The 11 one-on-one contest that Hawkins was involved in, that's extreme. The ability for Geelong to be able to beat them up around the footy, they'll plus 23 in contested footy. That's extreme for Port Adelaide. I think that there's a bit into that as well. That they did get them in every area, but I wouldn't be reading 100% of
that. You'll put an asterisk on that game as an outlier. Mm-hmm. What I will say, and we'll move on from this game in a moment. But what I will say is the Cats, they're 18th in kicking the ball long. Particularly in their defensive half, they don't want to give the opportunity for opposition teams to win the ball back. So they take 108 marks against Port that night, just to highlight that difference. There, you can say that the game itself is an outlier, but the way they play is going to stick true. They love control. Number one thing for marks, particularly defensive half marks. So I think only West Coast Eagles average more marks in the back half than Geelong do. So they want to pick you apart, moving the ball down the ground, 15, 20-metre kicks. And when there's the time to go long, you just watch the teamwork that goes into those opportunities to mark the ball between the arcs in the true midfield. They'll body up their opponents. They'll allow one jumper. They'll set up to then go quick from there to get to one-on-ones ahead of that. Now, whether it's Hawkins or Rowan, forward of the ball, they will explode from the halfway mark of the ground. So that's why I think they get things played in their favour more often than not.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Just before we finish up on this game, just to finish with Geelong, just watch it. Their form over the last 5 weeks, and I know that people are just looking at the Sydney and Richmond gap, but it's been going on for 5 weeks now. Defensively, there's holes in their game. They're the fourth easiest team to score against once the ball goes inside. That wasn't there for a 2-month period. They are the easiest team in the competition over the last 5 weeks to go from one end of the ground to the other.
So they're easiest.
Yeah, they're easiest. So they're struggling to defend ball movement. They're struggling to defend once the ball goes inside 50. And they're 7-8 in the competition over the last 5 weeks for winning the ball back in their own forward half. Their numbers that we have seen for Geelong up until round 14, 15. And in that period, had one power of a quarter in each game other than the Essendon game. We know that Essendon are down the bottom of the ladder in that period. But the first quarter against the Dogs, the first quarter against Sydney, the third quarter against Richmond. So there's a bit there to get right.
I just want to leave it with this. It always seems to fall apart late for Geelong. I don't know why that's the case, and there seems to be this cascading decision-making process that has them move players around to play positions they haven't played or have rarely played throughout the course of the season. And that's why last year we termed him home and away Chris, which is an unfair criticism given the success that Geelong have had as a football club for a long time. But this is it. You've got to win finals. You've got to win big finals. And they've got to win first week finals, which is something they haven't done for a while. Let's move on to another game, Horny. Friday night, Brisbane versus Richmond. Horny, this will be an absolute cracker. We know that they've got the absolute wood on them, Richmond. We know it's largely because of the way that they play in the recent couple of years. Brisbane have actually been quite reasonable in blocks and even in long periods over the last couple of performances, but the numbers reflect like it's absolute dominance.
Yeah, it does look that way on the scoreboard, and you know, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. But I think if you're the Brisbane coaching staff, I'm really interested to see whether or not you're going to get spooked by those last two performances and the margin, if you like. So I think if you can strip it right back and take the scoreboard out of it and just see and assess how you actually played against Brisbane, how did your system go against Richmond? Did it stack up? Did you get pulled apart? And I think if you're Chris Fagan and the Brisbane coaches, I think that you're looking at how our system actually stood up for large chunks of life. I don't think we need to completely throw things out and start again when it comes to Richmond. In those two games, in the qualifying final last year and the round 10 game, this year, we've seen for the last 4 or 5 years that Richmond's front half, their ability to win the ball back and score off that piece of play has been better than anyone else in the competition. But Brisbane have actually taken that away from them in their last two games. It's been mainly Richmond's ball movement from the back half, which has separated both matches and be able to get the win on the scoreboard as such. So I think if you're Richmond, you're looking at, well, we've taken away Richmond's number one strength, but we know that Richmond can get you multiple ways. They've got Brisbane the last couple of times with their second wood, if you like, which unfortunately there's not too many other teams in the competition that have two or three really dynamic ways to get you. So I think if you're Brisbane and Chris Fagan, I wouldn't be panicking too much with the last couple of performances.
What are these players got in common? Martin, Cochin, Grimes, Graham, Castagna, Chole, Vlosten, Arts, Asprey, Lambert, McIntosh, Rioli, Ross, Shortening, Curvis, Bagan, Bolter, and Piggott.
Haven't lost a Brisbane.
Never lost a Brisbane. 18 players in last week's team have never lost to Brisbane. Now, you can dance around that as much as you like, but as a player coming into this game, you just know that the player you played on the last two or three times, you know what he's about. You know that at some point you're going to get opportunity to shine. At some point the confidence is going to come through that this is how we play. This is what breaks you every time. So I think the margins are a real concern for me. I think if you look at the last 6 or 7 occasions they've played, the average losing margin is about 50 points. So even though they haven't had total dominance of the game, the blocks that they have, they've been able to put it on the scoreboard. That is a huge concern for Chris Fagan.
So just on that, how much do you weigh into the accuracy talk in regards to that? Because again, if you strip it back and just look at taking accuracy aside and assume that both teams kick what they were expected to kick. Yes, Richmond win both games, but they win the qualifying final under a kick and they win the round 10 this year by 10 points.
Mm. I just think the best teams take the opposition's game away from them. They make it difficult for them to win in the method that they have all year. So Brisbane, do Brisbane really stop Richmond scoring is my question. And I don't think they do. History shows they haven't had that ability. And I'm not sure it's been necessarily a strength of theirs all year. They play a great game to watch. It's very attractive. But is it going to be when the chips are down and you're 3 points up and there's 10 minutes to go, if you've got confidence that you're going to stop Richmond being able to get that next goal, being able to seize their ball movement, being able to stop Dustin Martin, being able to clamp their running half forward flankers, which did the damage last time. Last time was Bolton and Arts that really did the damage. I mean, everyone talks about Rewalt and Martin and Cochin and Grimes and what they all do. It's the flankers that get you with Richmond. It's the players at speed. I really think that, you know, when you look at Dustin Martin's form against against Brisbane, it is just ridiculous. It really is. Yeah. And I wonder whether they're going to have a look at it, because at some point you just can't say, well, if he goes in the midfield, we back our group. Or if he goes forward, we just put a player on it. And then it's a handover. So when he's working his way from centre bounce to full forward, historically he gets possessions. He just goes with the flow of the game, and there's confusion as to who's actually in charge of the Dustin Martin matchup. Is it as the handover being done, you know, or is it a midfield responsibility? Look at the numbers of the last half a dozen times they've played. Round 4, 2017, 16 disposals, 0 goals, 3. Then he's gone 40 disposals, 2 goals, 2. 17 disposals, 6 goals. 21 disposals, 2 goals. 14 disposals and 6 goals. And then earlier this year, 24 disposals, and he had 9 inside 50s. So I think you've got to stop what you've been doing. You've got to then reset and say, okay, what have we seen across the competition that's worked? And I think you've got to park your arrogance and your stubbornness as a football club and say the Justin Longmuir and the Fremantle midfield / halfbacker in Reece Conker showed the way. Reece Conker sat at a halfback flank and he had Jack Graham as his opponent. He knew Jack Graham was going in to be a midfielder post centre bounce. And as soon as the centre bounce was done, he rolled straight to Justin Martin. So don't get beaten by what you know is something that I always say. I think that the larger or the top end of coaching panels certainly abide by that. Conker kept Justin Martin to 11 disposals, only 2 in the forward 50, because he never got off the chain. He never had space to run. And only of his 11 disposals, 3 of those come at centre bounces. So he couldn't actually influence those. So you back your centre bounce crew, and that's fine at centre bounces. But as soon as that centre bounce is won or lost, you've got to get a player. Now, I reckon they've got 2 or 3 options here. I'd look at Burchard because he can concentrate. He can actually stay in the game. He can handle going to fullback. He can handle coming up to the wing line, if you like. Dustin Martin doesn't outwork you. He outsmarts you. He just beats you cold in the contest. And I'd also look at Lester. He's a guy that's, you know, been around for a decade who understands what's required, and he doesn't get spooked by a fullback. He doesn't get spooked by playing on Dustin Martin. So I think there's options there. But if I see Dustin Martin just rolling around as a spare sort of midfielder, half-forward type, the same will happen again.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair. We saw last year in the qualifying final, I think that if Brisbane had their time again, I think, you know, from a matchup point of view, I think that they would admit that they got that wrong by playing Marcus Adams on Dusty a lot of the time in the 450. I mean, in all due respect to Marcus Adams, if the ball's going inside 50 to, you know, to a one-on-one and it's Dusty and Marcus Adams and the ball hits the ground, well, I know who I'm backing. I think I'd be going either Lester or Darcy Gardner in that situation. I reckon the virtual positioning, I reckon they'll try and want to use him more offensively, especially with his ball movement that you touched on earlier on in the season, where, you know, he's sort of, you know, changing angles, you know, a little bit, if you like, which has been...
The only problem with Darcy Gardner is that if he gets taken into a stoppage, he's in real trouble.
In trouble.
Yeah, so I don't want to give any advantage to Dustin Martin around those stoppages if you can. So that's why I think a Birchall who's seen those half-forward flankers that are nippy through stoppage, and he's seen those smaller full-forward types. He's seen it all across his career. So that's I'm not setting up for Brisbane to be effective off half-back at the moment. I'm just trying to clamp what's beaten them time and time again. If you look at your rating points, he's averaged 18.7 rating points against Brisbane. Only Jackson McRae across the competition averages more against the Lions. So I just think you've got to start with negating Dustin before you even worry about what Brisbane do. Is that a fair comment?
Oh, I think that's absolutely fair. I think given that Tom Lynch isn't going to be there on Friday night, I would expect Dustin to play even more time inside that 450. So it's a key matchup, obviously.
What do you think with the clearances? I'm thinking that if Brisbane are to win this game, they've got to maximise winning or won clearances. So Richmond are 18th in the competition over the last month, averaging -12 clearances. So Brisbane, in my opinion, are going to be dominant here. What we do know with Richmond, it's hard to see on a television screen when you're watching it at night, but Richmond always have an extra one or an extra two players behind the ball, and it's almost like as soon as the ball comes into that area, then it's like firing a ball out of a gun. They're off and gone. With the confidence that if they turn the ball over, they've still got numbers behind the ball and they're really, really well settled. But I think Brisbane need to be not only dominant in clearance, but to find a way, and this is the challenge of playing against Richmond, to find a way to turn those forward half clearances, which they have won against Richmond before, to turn them into scores. And that's what they haven't done.
I think it's not just Brisbane. I think it's every tournament competition when you come up against Richmond that they are so good in playing that turnover game. So once the ball leaves the stoppage area and the ball's moving up and down the ground, there's no better thing in competition than Richmond offensively and defensively in that game. So I think you're almost in a position that when the ball is in that game, that you're going to consider that probably Richmond are going to outscore it in that game.
Yeah.
So how can we get Richmond? And the one chance that Richmond do give you, as you said, is from stoppages. And if you go back over the last 4 years and their finals record, which is just unbelievable, one time they've been got in 4 years, and that was a freakish performance by Collingwood. Yes, Mason Cox was unbelievable. It's a freakish performance by Collingwood from stoppage that night. Yes. They scored 60 points from stoppages that night, which Gary Vale is around about 25, 30 minutes ago. It's more than double the AFL.
In a final.
And those 450 stoppages that you talk about, they scored 3 goals from those 450 stoppages that night. It was a freakish performance. And I think, given how Rick are going at the moment, I think that they're actually in better shape than what they were this time last year, which is scary for everyone else, that you do need to challenge them from stoppages, and maybe you do need to risk getting scored against going the other way, because you know that they are going to give you a sniff. They are the second hardest team to score against from stoppages, but it's probably the only way at the moment which you can actually expose potential weakness, if you like, for Richmond. One thing that they can't do, and this is not just Richmond, this is for Port Adelaide, Geelong, whoever else is Richmond in the final series, you can't dump kick those clearance wins. You can't dump kick it to Grange. You can't dump kick it to Vlaston. You've got to almost absorb the heat, I think, that a Bolton or a Jack Graham or a Presti or a Cochrane is going to apply on you, and try and work your way through and out of that situation to get a really effective clearance win.
Richmond have averaged defensively only giving up 31 points the last 4 weeks. They're an awesome team. I think if Brisbane are going to be in this game or winning this game, it's got to be 7-6. It can't. If Richmond are allowed to free flow and keep ticking that scoreboard over, anything north of 7, I don't think Brisbane can go.
I don't think Brisbane can play in that sort of game, in that sort of low scoring game.
Play wide, boundaries row ins, do what you did 12 months ago for this specific matchup. But I just want to quickly touch at the Brisbane targets versus top 8 teams. So Eric Hipwood targeted 42 times. Eric goal 40%. That's not a bad return. But the team goal 1 in 4. I don't mind that. That's AFL average against the best teams, which is really good. The Big O's returns are very similar. Charlie Cameron targeted 33 times against top 8 teams. 0 goals for Charlie and only 1 for the team. It's a broken product having him at full forward as your target at any time against a good team. It might work against the also-rans and look great and put on a show for your fans, but against the best, it doesn't work. So get Cameron out of full forward for a final series, or you know what? Bleed the same way as you did in 2019. Accuracy you've touched on. When you sit with this game, give us your selection. I didn't get the selection off you for the Port Adelaide Geelong game. Can you give me that one first?
I'll be surprised if Geelong beat Port Adelaide. I'll be shocked if Brisbane beat Richmond.
I'll be tipping Geelong. I'm disappointed to hear you say that because you're a pretty good judge. I'll be tipping Geelong in a close one, and I think Richmond are going to put on a show as they always do. Move on to the next game. That brings us to St Kilda versus the Western Bulldogs. These two haven't played since round 2. It's so long ago, I'm not sure you can take much from this game. I know the Saints had a strong win, 39-point victory, and the Saints have won their last 2 occasions by 39 and 27 points. Gresham played that one, so there's clearly things that are a bit different from a St Kilda point of view, and I think the Dogs are a different product right now than what they were potentially at the start of the year. But they got picked apart a little bit. Teams didn't let them switch the ball and move the ball down back as much as they were. I think they were exposed by Collingwood in the first game of the year, and it made it really tough from there on. How do you see this one unfolding, Lonnie?
This is probably the Oregon's going to be the best game of the weekend from on the eye. It might not be the closest, it might be other close games, but I think just from how these teams play, they're really aggressive with their ball movement. They want to move with their speed. They both do it in different manners, if you like. But I think just from a pure sit down, watch the three point of view, this is the game of the four that I reckon is going to be one to watch in that regard.
They abused was last time they played against him, these two rucks in Marshall, and particularly Paddy Ryder. I thought Ryder was quite frightening, really, what he did to him at centre bounces. And I know it's all hit-out work, and often hit-out work doesn't translate to victories, but if you can set your midfield onto a really aggressive, proactive positioning, particularly at centre bounces, and Ryder had 12 hit-out advantages versus two against Tim Inglis. And I just think now the onus for me is going to fall on those senior core of midfield players that the Saints possess. And I'm looking at Jack Steele, who's had a fantastic year, Seb Ross, Zach Jones. If I had to go anywhere in 2020, off the back of hit-out dominance this weekend, they should be winning this game. If they don't win this game by absolute clearance brutality, then for me, it's not the St Kilda profile that I thought we were going to get. So for me, it's a perfect matchup for St Kilda to win the first final.
I think that Ryder-Marshall combination against English is going to be so important, because I think once the ball is there, and if it's in the neutral situation, I'm backing the Dogs back around level. I'm backing Bonton, I'm backing McRae, I'm backing Bailey Smith, Josh Dunkley. Liver is in absolutely ripping form at the moment. This might sound harsh, I've only got real faith and confidence, if you like, in Jack Steele, in that St Kilda midfield. I mean, I can't get out of my head what the undermanned West Coast midfield did against St Kilda that night. Seb Ross was torched by Tim Kelly that night. It was really disappointing. Zach Jones didn't get near it when he was, washed, if you like, by Brian Ainsworth. So I think that I've got more confidence in the Dogs round level, but if English gets monstered like he did in round two, and Ryder and Marshall give that midfield group first use as opposed to being in a neutralised situation, I think that's going to be really, really critical to St Kilda's performance.
Steele took responsibility for the majority of last time they played. McRae was out on the wing, so I like him on ball back around the action. And I guess the question is, can the Saints tag themselves to a victory? Does Seb Ross have the concentration to go and lock on a Jack McRae? Now, if you can stop Jack McRae, or even I'll throw a wild card, I'd tag Bailey Smith. I don't think he's been tagged yet in his AFL journey, and I don't think that he's had that mental challenge. He's been able to freewheel. He's been terrific. He's been a real wild card for them in that midfield. But can Seb Ross go and negate and tag, not like he did against Tim Kelly? I think it's a great lesson to learn at the time that had come. That if we're going to be a serious finals contender, you need to look at Scott Pendlebury. He takes himself out of his own game and plays the team role. Stoppage is quite regularly doing tagging roles for blocks or periods of game to set the game up for Collingwood. Can a Seb Ross do that? Can a Jack Steele do that? I think it's that important. I think that the Saints have got more weapons in other areas of the ground, particularly forward of centre. But if they are not prepared to lock down on either Smith or McRae, I don't think he can stop Bontempelli because his work's done the coal face. But particularly on those other two, I think they go a long way to winning.
Yeah, I think with Bontempelli in that round two game, Jack Steele did go to him. But I think Jack Steele has now elevated himself to a level where he needs to be that ball-winning number one midfield beast, if you like, St Kilda, as opposed to going to someone in that negating role. Because I think if you take Jack Steele away from being the number one offensive weapon for St Kilda in that midfield group, as a touch, I haven't got that confidence in the rest of them that they're going to be able to deliver that. I've got confidence in Steele because he's done it so much this year.
Let's have a look at forward center. This, I think the Saints are so dangerous. It's a credit to Brett Ratten, and I think it is Sammy Hamill, the forwards coach for St Kilda.
Yeah, not sure.
Not sure who the forwards coach is. I'm giving Sammy the credit, but let's just give it to him. They've had to go the other way the last few years. So we call it the front and centre seagulling snap. So they're super organised. It's almost like when that high ball comes in, it goes to a location. It doesn't go to a player on the lead. It goes 15 to 20 from goal, high ball entry for King, Ryder or Marshall to fly for the mark. So St Kilda only one from the competition for the volume of inside 50s, yet when you look at when the ball hits the ground, where they can take those marking opportunities, they're fourth in the comp for contested marks, they're sixth in the comp for ground ball gets one to the tin, and they're top two forward 50 tackles. So the organisation on that spilt ball, if it comes, is absolutely first class. And I think this close-to-goal warfare is something that's challenging all teams to be really diligent.
Yeah, I agree. So I've got a concern with the Saints in that midfield area, as we just touched on. But once the ball goes in the Saints 450, I've then got concern over the Bulldogs. Because I think if we look at the Dogs, and probably their number one strength, if you like, which has been the case for the last 18 months, is a move of putting one into the ground to the other. The number one team in the competition doing that. That's the number one asset, if you like. So, Addison, Crozier, Daniel, so important for that part of the game. But can they look after these, Dan Butler? Can they look after Jack London? Can they look after Dean Camp? When the ball hits the ground, like you said, in these predictable spots, can they actually turn their mind to first and foremost being defence first as opposed to being offensively sound, if you like? I think that's a real challenge that St Kilda are going to throw at the Dogs. And, we talk about the four-half a lot, if you like. And, St Kilda this year are number two in the competition for points scored from their four-half. So whether that's bring the ball from a stoppage situation, bringing the ball back up the opposition, they're number two in the competition. The Dogs, on the other hand, give up the six most points from those chains. This part of the game, to me, is really significant concern, if you like, from the Bulldogs, and a real positive, I think, where St Kilda can expose the Dogs.
Spilt ball in the forward 50 is the weapon. It's an absolute beauty. 0 to 15 metres from goal, they're number one in the competition, the Saints. And then 16 to 30 metres from goal, they're number three. So 0 to 30, they're clearly the best team in the competition. So that's where it's going. Can you stay diligent? Can you ski behind, on a small tow rope behind a Dan Butler for 4, 5, 6 seconds? Can you do that against the Saints? I'm not sure you can. They're so dangerous. Marshall's taken 16 marks inside 50 this year, 10 of those contested. King's taken 26 marks inside 50, 14 of those contested. They're not leading. They're waiting for the high ball to come in, and it's going to be an absolute, I think, masterstroke from the coaching of the St Kilda Football Club, particularly over the off-season of last year, to set this up. This is where this win would have been orchestrated, in my opinion. The Western Bulldogs want to flip the ball around by hand. They're the number one player on the team in the competition. They're an awful team to play against. So if they can get their running game going, they pose any opposition significant threats. And I go back to that game against Melbourne a few weeks ago, when everyone was thinking Melbourne would steamroll them with brutality and the all-conquering midfield. But the Dogs, interestingly, have conceded the fewest turnovers of all teams in the competition this year, despite playing that high handball game and fast going on. It's staggered move. So I think that they do possess a weapon. That is their go-to. So it's not necessarily clearance. It is ball movement that gets the Dogs back in the game.
So in regard to that, I think that we're seeing the Dogs this year that they have struggled against the best teams in the competition. And I think that the reason why that they have struggled against the best teams in the competition is that because if you're defensively on your system and you've got a really strong defensive system, you can shut down that aggressive movement. We've seen that times this year. The first quarter against Geelong 5 or 6 weeks ago, Geelong are off defensively. The Bulldogs got them. They are able to get through. Then Geelong switched on to their defensive mode for the last 3 quarters, and the Bulldogs ball movement couldn't go anywhere. They just couldn't move the foot for the last 3 quarters. Oh, this is actually the number one challenge, if you like, for me. Can they deny the Bulldogs this ball movement game? Because I think out of all the finalists in the competition this year, I think that the Saints have probably the most question marks on them defensively. if you like. Think of, you know, we'll get to Collingwood next. Collingwood's number one strength is his defence. West Coast has been quite well. And the top four teams in the competition are there for a reason because their defensive system holds up. I think that the question marks over whether or not St Kilda's defensive system can shut down this Bulldogs handballing, ball-moving corridor speed game, if you like.
Well, this is another one of those top eight versus bottom ten discussions. Against the bottom ten teams out of the defensive half, the Dogs average 27 points, and they can be quite brilliant, shifting the ball, slicing and dicing, making the ground big, if you like, separating to the extremities, and then if they catch one lazy opposition player or someone who's in a poor position, they're gone. So that's 27 points against bottom 10 teams, but only 15 against top 8 teams. So that automatically there's a two-goal loss there. Can you make that two goals up somewhere else is the challenge.
Yeah, and I know that you say this a lot, but two goals might not seem like a lot. If you're shooting in the woods, you go, no, well, it's only two goals. That is significant in when you're looking at a game that could be decided by, you know, under 10 points. And any time that there's a two-goal swing in that regard, it's a really significant drop-off.
Yeah, well, it could be 20 to 25% of your scoring. Yeah. I mean, we're only scoring 8 or 9 goals a game at the moment. So if you lose two in the way you want to play, I think it's a real kick in the guts. On the back of that, so that's two goals. If you take out the Brisbane performance where they scored 43 points effectively from the halfback flank, so that was just an outlier, it drops to 11. So I just have question marks in the back of my mind that if you're setting the game up for ball movement, it needs to give you more of a reward than that. It needs to give you closer to 35, 40 points, because on turnover is where you score the bulk of your scores, and on ball movement or system is where the bulk of that comes from. So for that number to be so low is a real question mark for me. On the back of the Tim English question mark, I've got the Saints winning this one and winning it quite convincingly.
I've gone the Dogs. I've gone the Dogs purely because of that midfield battle. I think English is in better form than what he was at the start of the year, where he can actually hit the ball to the ground and allow those midfielders to have a new ball up for grabs, which I think is a concern for the Saints.
Philip, we should have talked about this before we went on air.
It's always good to be different.
All right, Horny, that brings us to our last final for the weekend, the West Coast Eagles versus the Collingwood Football Club. Now, can I just say before we start, I think most people are just already ticking this one as the easiest final to pick of the weekend and saying the West Coast at home, get all the spoils, get all the luxuries, and the Pies are out of sorts of fraction. I think this will be a really close game. This is a genuine 50-50 for me.
Yeah, well, I haven't... Yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to the odds under this. I wouldn't know what it's like, so I'm actually surprised to hear that. I think I'm only going to be in this for a long way. And the main reason why is because I think when you look at Collingwood, their number one strength throughout the whole season has been their ability to defend. And I think when they were going, you know, really well at the start of the year, I think that the concern was that they were defending so well that they weren't able to get the score on the ball. So the opposition was still in the game despite Collingwood's dominance. And I think that the same applies now, even though Collingwood aren't going as well as what they were at the start of the year. Defensively, it was brought against Port Adelaide last game out. That they were so strong to be able to hold up to the amount of 50s that Port Adelaide were generating, the amount of clearance wins that Port Adelaide were generating. The question for Collingwood is, you know, can they actually score enough? I'm sure that we'll touch on that shortly. But defensively, I think is going to keep them in this game for a long period. And as we know with finals, if you're in it, to half time, to three quarter time, to during the last quarter, the longer you're in it, the weird things can happen towards the end. I think that this is absolutely far from a walk in the park for West Coast.
Over the last 4 weeks, Scotty Pendlebury's involved in 50% of Collingwood scores. That's a frightening number. It just shows what a star he's been. He's had 22 clearances the last 3 weeks. So I can see Pendlebury almost just watching that new. So where's he going? Because I've never seen a ruckman basically hit the ball to himself or grab it out of the ruck. Grab the own, the smash and grab, if you like, more than what that Nui does. So I think that Pendlebury, whilst he may be standing next to another player, ready for that Nui, ready for where he's either hitting it or whether he's going to grab it or not, that'll be a massive play. It'll be a massive part of the game. What territory will they get from that Nui as a package? whether it's surging the ball forward or kicking or grabbing and handballing to a teammate at those clearance areas. And Grundy, whilst he hasn't had a great year, and we've all talked about what's happened to Brody Grundy, he had his highest disposal game for 12 weeks against Port Adelaide last week. So he's maybe coming out of the quicksand. He's maybe not, it's not as evident to us yet, but maybe he's starting to turn the corner.
His last 2 weeks have been, from his last 2 weeks have been really strong. And not getting back to the same levels as what we saw for 17, 18, 19, but getting back to a level which was far away better than what it was for that, you know, 2 month period where we haven't seen, you know, Brody Grundy play like that. And finally, his game against West early on this year, that was his worst game of his career since 2014. So he got absolutely torched by Nick Natterjee. And you just touched on Nick Nat there, and I think it's obvious for everyone to see that. I think that he's probably the most important player to any team in this final series, Nick Nat. And I think for Brody Grundy, I can't see Brody Grundy, I don't know if you're a Cronulla supporter, getting torched like he did to that degree in round 8, round 9 this year. I mean, that was just a game where Nick separated the game in the second quarter and got the game going for the West Coast.
The Pies are an interesting team. I mean, they come into these finals, you think, okay, what's their absolute strength? And you talk about defensively, and then you look at the names that they've got in the midfield. I mean, Adams has had another fantastic season. All Australian's been so consistent. Yeah, he's coming off 26 disposals and 11 tackles last week, so he's in ripping form. I just wonder why, with this midfield talent, they don't play more free-flowing. And I think that if they can find themselves in this game at three-quarter time, I honestly think that'll be the discussion. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, let's play with a bit of freedom this last quarter. Let's pull a rabbit out of that. Let's open some space up for Degoe at full forward. Let's get Mason Cox up a bit higher. Let's try some different things. I honestly think that this is a game that Collingwood can win on talent. They've got freak factor talent. You know, Degoe at full forward. I don't know what they're doing with Stevenson. I don't even know if he plays. So that's a discussion for later in the week. But when you look at this forward line, and I touched on this last week, Mason Cox, whilst he's only averaging 8 or 9 disposals a game, has been really important over the last month. He's only played 5 games for the year with Degoe and only 3 games as a threesome with Degoe, Cox and Stevenson. Now, that is really difficult to sit here and say, oh, their forward line's not working. It's not working because there's no real chemistry, and that chemistry hasn't been there. The confidence is certainly not there from Stevenson. So I can see that if he's in there, Stevenson, and they can get off to some sort of reasonable start, give them some supply, they could just click. They really could. And we haven't seen it all year, and it's a hard thing to say that it's going to change in a final because generally things don't. But I can see this forward line functioning with those three in unison.
Yeah, okay. I'll be surprised if that happens, just given the body of work across the course of the season.
Without those players, without Freeman there.
I think it's so hard for us to just go from a mediocre to being a dangerous weapon all of a sudden. And I get that, the person has other things as well. I think it's going to be really a real challenge for Collingwood to be able to generate 10, 11, 12 goals on the scoreboard, which is why I think they need it to be a really dour, boring, low-scoring affair through three-quarter time to get you into that situation like you're saying where you might be level pegging or a goal behind at three-quarter time where you do open things up now. I don't think you can go with that strategy from the start, because I think that you've got to be winning for as long as possible and get to three-quarter time, get to that, near level with the mark, and it might only be 5 goals to three-quarter time. I think the point where that's a given is this isn't going to be a great game to watch.
No.
This is going to be down, which is why I'm really excited about the St Kilda Bulldogs game. I think that will be a really good game to watch.
The last 4 weeks, Collingwood have scored 27 points per intercept, which is AFL 16th. That's the method. You can't win. Not worry about first form, but you can't win preliminary finals, grand finals with those sorts of numbers. So that something has to change. The problem's not necessarily winning back the football. It's punishing once you get that intercepted ball back inside 50. That's the only concern.
They haven't had an issue all year at winning the ball back.
Yeah.
They, if you look at how many times they win the ball back in their 450 and the midfield zone combined, no team wins the ball back more than what Collingwood do. In that significant area of the ground, so that ability to be able to get the return on the scoreboard. And I think if you look back to that round 8 game where West Coast played against Collingwood, to me, I think this is a bit of the Twilight Geelong game where everything was just that much of an outlier for what Collingwood did and for what West Coast did to that degree. And we heard Adam Simpson earlier on in the week on AFL 360 where he did mention it, but everything just clicked that day. And that's not going to happen again. I mean, they scored a goal from over half of their inside 50s.
Mm.
That's crazy. No team has done that since Geelong beat Melbourne by 186 points. So it was a crazy day where things, everything that worked for West Coast, nothing worked for Collingwood. I don't think we can read too much into that game.
The one thing that does need to change with that forward 50 is they need to be able to find a way to mark the ball inside their forward 50. They've taken 14 marks out of the last 3 weeks inside the forward 50. I mean, that's not going to pay the bills.
And the problem is they're not marking it. They can't allow Barat, Shepherd, McGovern to do their thing as well. Assuming that McGovern plays, of course. Well,
Liam Ryan is the most informed player in the competition over the last month, if you ask me. And just what he does is just unreal. Number one score involvement player across the AFL for the last month of football. His form, he's just in front of guys like Liberatore, who we talked about earlier, Oak, Lyon, all sorts of players that have had really good back end of the season. What do you do with Liam Ryan? What do you do? Do you put a tag to him, or do you just play a natural half-back flanker on him? It's such a tough matchup.
I think Colin would almost have the perfect matchup for him in Braden Maynard. Over the last two or three seasons, done a really good job on it. We've seen Maynard's one-on-one numbers are really strong. He's got the work at ground level. We have a go with Liam Ryan at ground level. He's clearly got that competitiveness in that I think if I'm making Michael, I'm taking credit for Maynard, that this guy is the most informed player and most influential player over the last 4 weeks. Your role is to go up. And you've got him for the day. I think that matchup really does suit Collingwood. And I think if you looked at that game for West Coast against North Melbourne, if you like, they were a bit off. They had a lot out that day and whatever. But that second quarter, he just completely iced the game for West Coast in that second quarter and super over the game. I think that a lot has been made of the Brodie Cundy matchup, which I totally understand that and the importance in regards to that. But I think this Liam Ryan and Brodie Maynard matchup is almost of equal importance, if you like.
Tom Barras is a player that fascinates me. If you look at his last month of football, number one intercept mark in the defensive 50 in the competition. But he's so vulnerable one-on-one. He's been in 12 one-on-one contests, he's lost 5 of them. I just get nervous every time the ball goes near him. It's almost flip a coin. Now, this happened in the back half of last season and really put the halfback 6 in the turmoil. McGovern was trying to overcompensate and do too much to help out and then get beaten himself. No means land. So I'm just going to watch the Barras matchup. I don't know who it's going to be. Is it going to be Mason Cox? Yeah, I don't know what happens with McGovern, whether he gets up or not. But if he doesn't, it could be a mind check. It's just going to be such a fascinating watch. And I think this is Collingwood's big chance. If they can get hold of Barras close to the goal, all of a sudden, all these problems we're talking about with their forward 50 correct themselves. And I think Adam Simpson will be having some sleepless nights on the way to this battle.
Yeah, across the course of the season, he's the 4-5 broken key defender in the competition.
I think he's good.
Every club love a team rat.
Yeah.
But I think he reminds me a little bit of times of a Brian right in the area. He would create so much frustration for you because he's good, he's unbelievable. I mean,
really impressed.
We saw it on grand final day that Mason Cox went into that grand final, obviously very hot from what he did in the preliminary final against Richmond. And the first half, Barras just took him to the cleaners. Intercepted, didn't allow him. run and jump at the footy and whatever. But then we see the game last year against Richmond, second half right down in the year, and Tom was just torn to shreds with some of the worst hours I've seen Tom Brass actually play. So he's good, he's sensational, he's bad, he's terrific.
He gets a lot of feedback, there's no doubt about that. Andrew Gaff's another one that's been playing the true midfield over the last month, and his game has changed a lot. He's a massive component of this this year.
What do I do with Andrew Gaff though now? Playing in a band he has over the last couple of weeks, he's been really influential with Red and Shuri coming back. Does he still shoot the centre bounce? Does he now go back into his ring?
No. Well, he can do both. There's no question about that. And there's some security, I guess, for Adam Chips to say, let's just put Gaff back there. We know he's the lead wingman. But when you have 13 and 14 contested possessions over the last fortnight, I think sometimes you've got to say, you know what, this is working. And the player, we can't emotionally sabotage our own. This is a great job. We're just going to put us back the lead because we've got this other guy that we think does it better than you. I hate that mindset. I think if you've got someone up and rolling, the player coming back in, hey, listen, we know you can do this, but at the moment, Caffey's doing a great job, so you're out for them. That's what I'd be sort of saying. Now, we always talk about what the West Coast do really, really well, and that's their inside 50 conversion. Over the last 3 years, number one, and this year number two, for converting an inside forward 50 into a goal. It is frightening how this cohesion is built between Darling and Kennedy, and we see Oscar Allen there sitting there, and he understands his role. I mean, there's a level of coaching with this, and then there's a level of the shared experience, playing a lot of football together. It is bloody hard to stop.
Oh, it's really hard to stop. And you cover it, unfortunately, no, that's the same issue that we alluded to early on in this game. But I think our body of work this year out a lot of that West Coast game has been really strong in that space. That they've been one of the hardest teams to actually convert an inside 50 onto the scoreboard against. So I think West Coast they rely on generating 45, 50 entries. They rely and have done for so long on the efficiency of those entries. So it's sort of Jordan Ruffhead, can we have a better day than he did, two or 3 months ago against Josh Kennedy, which I'll hold back into the passing more in Jack Darling, really good matchup there. Well, the one for me, I think it's a bit of a concern for the Collingwood is the Oscar Allen matchup. Mm-hmm. Oscar Allen's game against Collingwood this year was the highest game of his career, kicking 3 goals. He might be exposed to Jack Magnum, if you like, and I think that might be the matchup there for me.
Yeah, they've got a lot of concerns if players come into this one, and it'd be a great result for them. But as I said, I think we're in agreement on this one that it's going to be a lot closer than what the bookmakers have got it. The one thing is their clearance game, the West Coast. We know they're so strong. Number one, the competition. It's scoring from 450 stoppages over the last 6 weeks. So I'm just concerned that they're in these – the defensive lapses that can come to half-back flankers, back pockets, and even key post defenders. We saw a few weeks back, and I think Simo showed a little bit of evidence of Nick Knapp tapping the ball to Kennedy wrapping around and snap the goal. So everyone's on full alert now. And that's 450 stoppages for the West Coast. It should be a cracker. Who wins?
I think the West Coast are currently going to be for a long one.
Yeah, I could see an upset here. I could see De Galli being the man. I think if De Galli kicks 3+, the Pies will win. If he kicks less than 3, I think the West Coast will win. You have to probably tip the West Coast. Mate, fantastic first week of footy. So just to wrap up, your 4 selections in order if you can.
Richmond, Dog, West Coast.
So you were totally different. I've gone to Richmond, St Kilda, the West Coast,